Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 42284 podcast. Thanks for joining us again this week, and we hope you enjoy the rest of Colin's interview.
How do I know who he is? He's going to go down to the next village, and he's going to tell the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese Army, whoever, that there's a dummy down at that old LZ. And they were going to come down, and they were going to kill me.
And no doubt they knew it was vacant because...
they're the ones that made it vacant.
The ones, right.
So, of course, that old cart's moving real slow, but I have to make a decision real quick. I've got to kill the guy. And I felt bad. I mean, I want everybody to know I really felt bad about this.
Yeah.
Because he just gave me some water.
Right.
So I got my rifle and I start walking up behind him. But, you know, something struck me. And I said, no, I can't do it. Now, don't get me wrong. Under any other circumstances, he'd have been laying on the side of the road. But he was just too nice. But I know what's going to happen. It was already in my mind. So I get back, and instead of going back to the very same bunker, I went to the other side, to the other corner of the bunker, because I figured he would go and tell the Viet Cong, the VC, exactly where I was. And if they went to that sector, I'd be in a different sector. And I had about 200 rounds. And I couldn't kill them all. I knew that. But I figured with 200 rounds, I could take out 15, 20.
You had a fighting chance.
No, just I could kill some.
Yeah.
There was no chance in there. You know the old saying, when pigs fly?
Yeah.
Maybe then. But all I could do is kill some of them. So I was up all night waiting on this, and it didn't come. And the next night it didn't come. And every day in between there, I was on the radio trying to get somebody to hear me. On the third day, I see this chopper way out in the horizon. So there's about four frequencies that was commonly used in Vietnam. I'm switching one and I'm going, if you're the Chinook that's flying, you know, can you respond? No respond. And he'd get a little bit closer, and I'd change channels. He flew past me, almost above me. I couldn't get him. And he went past me probably 500-600 yards. And I hit another one, and I said, if you're the Chinook, could you, I just see you fly over an old LZ. Can you turn around? And all of a sudden, I see the Chinook turn around. And I'm thinking, Jesus, can you see this LZ there? He said, yeah, I can see you. I says, and I really briefly told him who I was, American soldier.
Wrong place.
Need to be evacuated out of here. And he's coming toward me, but then he starts getting us some doubt. You know, he kind of questioned, well, how do I know this isn't a booby trap or, you know, an ambush? I said, I tell you what, I'll make you a deal. I'll be standing in the middle of the LZ with my arms in the air, and you fly by, and if I look like a gook to you, take me out. Because I couldn't take another day.
You're right.
I just couldn't do it. So he flew in there and seen that I was a GI, and he landed and took me back to the rear. They didn't take me to the place I was supposed to go, and I didn't have the piece of paper no more, so I just had them take me back to the rear, which was Ben Wall, and I get off of the helicopter and I walk into the first sergeant's office and I'm mad. Oh, I'm mad. And I walk in and I look over there and the first sergeant's on the typewriter and he looks up to me and he's, Sergeant White, where in the hell have you been? We've been looking all over, blah, 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 you know, and I told him my story and nobody ever took responsibility, you know. But anyhow, I found out later that the first sergeant was typing a letter to my mother.
Is that right?
That I was MIA.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I'm sure glad you didn't send that.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty bad. But that was the scariest.
Not the fight.
You know, when you get into a firefight, that adrenaline pops in. And you just are, all that training that they gave you that you used to gripe about and blah, blah. Man, that kicks in just like that, and you're on automatic cruise. But when you're sitting there just thinking about death coming, and you know it, that's a different. They didn't train. I don't remember the training. I must have fell asleep during that class.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say I can imagine, but I can't.
No.
Right? I mean, you know, you go to Lowe's today, and they say, you know, are you military? They try to give you the discount. No. No, I never was. Never was brave enough. You know, it just wasn't on our radar growing up to...
Well, when he says, have you ever truly been lost? I remember one time I was over at the putt place. They were discing back there in that field. Do you remember when Dad was leasing that back there that Stephen Bullock owns now?
Yeah.
And he had me go back there and take Leonard Hampton some water. And he said, you know, just come back to the truck here out this roadbed. We're going to be across the field. And I got back there and got turned around. And I'm lost for maybe 15 minutes, and I am smoked. I mean, I am sweating, eyes dilated. I'm never going to be found, and I'm in the middle of Round Hill, Kentucky.
Right.
So I can only imagine what that, you know, that 15 minutes felt like for
three days
in a different country by yourself. I mean, I could still see Leonard. You know, it's like if all else fails, just go back to Leonard.
Yeah. Right.
But in a different country, knowing that the enemy... That somebody that is in a war against you, literally...
They want you dead.
They want you dead, and is literally up the road, no telling it, just a short distance.
Could possibly know you're there.
Could possibly know you're there. I can't... Just knowing what that feeling felt like and multiply it times a million, I can't... I'm like you, I can't imagine
when
what
that's... When we went to Europe, we took a cruise, and they basically just went around England hitting the ports, right? And you had to be back. I don't know if you all have watched the news, but... There was six or seven people left at port in South Africa somewhere, and they're blaming the cruise ship. But that the cruise ship will say, you know, they'll tell you, if you don't get to this ship by 6 o'clock, we will
We're
leave.
Leaving, yeah.
And so
and they mean it.
No, they make believers that, and they do probably a lot, and you just don't hear about it. And so my wife wants to see everything she can see. I do too, right? But I want to get back about 5:15. She wants to step on that ship as they're pulling the buoys up. Yeah, as they're pulling the buoys up, we still got time. And so we did this, you know, several times, and my anxiety would just go through the roof. And she finally said, "Would you, you know, if we miss that ship, and we're in England, we can get in a car and we can drive and beat that ship to the next port. It's not that big a deal." And still, but just being having the thought of being left that far away from home, just in general, just caused me my anxiety to go crazy. I cannot imagine, you know, going through that. So.
Well, I was convinced that the Papa-san was going to tell somebody.
Right.
So do you think he didn't?
No, I'm sure he didn't. You know,
because they would have been there in that amount of time, wouldn't they?
Yeah, there would have been a little, wouldn't have been a big firefight, but there would have been a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember a captain telling me, don't you guys worry about being captured, talking about us NCOs. Sergeants and stuff. He says, they're just going to capture officers. I said, they're not going to capture us, which was a relief. And they said, no, they're just going to shoot you.
Right.
Oh, that's a downer.
So
you had no information.
Yeah. Because I didn't have no information. You know, I was a platoon sergeant. I could tell them what I was going to do with my platoon tomorrow, but big deal. But I tell you, looking back, you guys ever see the movie Survivor? Survivor?
Lone Survivor, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Remember when the village, the goat people, found the guys up there and they let them go?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in the movie theater saying, shoot them. Shoot them. They're going to go tell.
Yeah, that started...
And I'm thinking about my little Papa-san that I didn't shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew if they let those guys go, they were going to go down the village, and you were going to be in some deep water.
That was their downfall.
That was their downfall. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll probably get some backlash on this, but...
We'll list his number.
Yeah, list my number.
It's for all the backlash and the single women.
Yeah, and location is fine. If they would have killed all those guys, because they were terrorists, they would have got away.
Right.
But... One thing I know about the American fighting man, most of them, not all of them, most of them are compassionate. But when you got to fight an enemy that thinks he's going to go to heaven if he dies, or if you fight an enemy that is starving to death, and this comes from Unc, you're in for an all-day fight. And that's what we're in this terrorist thing here. These people think they're going to go to heaven. I wish I could bring one of them back and say, well, what did you think? Huh? Wasn't 26 virgins up there, was there? No, it was kind of warm, wasn't it? Yeah, okay. But people who fight that way, you have to kill them.
Well, Unc was in World War II in the Navy.
Right.
And I've heard him tell time and again about, we would call them kamikazes.
Yeah.
He would call them kamasajis. But he said, you know, they were leaving with a mission knowing they weren't coming back.
Oh, they knew they weren't coming back.
Yeah. He said, how do you whip somebody like that other than what we had to do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember him saying that a lot is, you know, when somebody's hungry or they think there's a reward for that, there's very little surrender there.
And you're talking about compassion. I don't think that no other cultures, they teach compassion like it's taught here, right? I mean,
it's not.
It's in our nature to be compassionate.
It is. And I'll put England in that category. Those are the two major countries that have some compassion. But,
I think
war, it's just so hard for me to...
I've
never been in that situation.
Yeah, seeing the things that you all saw will cause you to...
It'll harden a person, I would think.
Well,
won't it, to an extent?
There's an old saying, you send a boy to war and the same man doesn't come back. You take your grandfather. I've talked to your grandfather.
Yeah, that's something he didn't talk about a lot.
He didn't. No, and I tell you what.
There's a lot of questions I'd like to ask him looking back, but.
It's hard for a combat veteran to talk to a non-combat veteran. Now, I held it in for 35 years. And I'm not ashamed to say, I've had 12 psychiatrists. I've got PTSD. Yes, I'm a hardened person. I'm calmer now than I used to be, but I'm suffering from PTSD and also Agent Orange. But yeah, we fought in the jungle at 120 degrees, carrying 75 pounds of stuff on your back. Now, put a 50-pound feed bag on your back and walk 8 or 10 miles in the woods up here in August. That might give you a little bit of an idea how that feels. And then just for the heck of it, just to make it kind of more realistic, I'll get about 100 guys up there shooting at you.
Yeah.
That'll give you a pretty good idea if you're sitting around and say, I really wish I knew how it felt. Well, I can figure it out for you. I can help you a little bit. But those are things that you never forget, just like your grandfather, just like my dad, just like your grandpa, mm-hmm. Uncle Kurt. He was in the Korean War. Uncle Porter, Denny,
John A. was in the Korean War.
John A. was in the Korean War.
Navy in the Korean War.
Yeah, so was my uncle, his grandfather, Uncle Kurt, and little Margie's husband, Uncle Joe. We've had a lot in our family go to war, but every one of them come back.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot in this community, yeah. If you get to looking around.
And very fortunate, as you said,
yeah.
For the vast majority.
And some of them, and one of them being your dad, your grandpa, didn't have an easy go of it.
Right.
Your grandpa was not a cook behind the lines.
Right.
And
he was in the third wave to storm the beaches at Normandy.
So. Yeah, and... So all you got to do is watch one of those movies, and you know what your grandpa went through. I know me and my dad, we'd stopped a couple times. He'd be sitting out there on the front porch, and Dad'd go up there, and we'd... And one thing that I did when I was a kid, when I'd hang around my grandpa, we'd go to a store in South or the Sunfish store.
Walter Miller's.
Walter Miller's. and there'd be a couple other old guys. They were old to me. And they sat out there on the bench and talk. And I always loved listening to them. And I think that's what young people today don't do.
Oh, I agree.
They do not listen to the old people's stories. And I wish that we could bring back your grandpa.
Yeah.
Bring back Uncle Gene. Of course, we'd have to monitor him real close.
So we're all right at 40, give or take a few years.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is the reason we're doing this.
Yes. We want to preserve some of this.
We want to know them. We want to hear them. You know, we all grew up around here with the Warrens and the John A's and the Kurtz hearing this stuff.
But we never got it on
We never got it on tape.
Well, we didn't have some of the technology, not to say we couldn't.
True.
But with Papaw, too, it was, you know, we were told from little, Papaw don't talk about that.
Yeah, don't talk about that.
Papaw don't talk about that.
Well, we've messed around, too, and about let everybody pass away that knows those stories, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've heard them, but I don't know them like you can sit and tell them, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we want to hurry up and get you on the second episode.
Well, I mean, we need to catch him before.
Episodes in.
I mean, he's probably got another couple good weeks at least, you know.
I hope so. Damn, guys. But let me tell you something about your grandpa. You're absolutely right. He wouldn't want to talk to you. I didn't talk to my kids. But you know, when me and Dad would pull up there, Dad was a WW2. I was a Vietnam combat veteran. Your grandpa talked. He talked.
Yeah.
Now, there was another guy here, and I got to talk to him. He was a POW.
Rex.
Rex, what was his last name?
Rex Patton.
Patton, that's who it is, Rex Patton.
I forgot that.
Yeah, Rex was POW. He had a hard road.
Oh, man. And I loved listening to him. Him and Dad were pretty good buddies. You know, they all in the same age group. And I liked doing that when I was a little kid, though. And I remember asking my grandpa why he wasn't in the war. And he said, well, again, he said, small, smart grandson.
Handsome,
he said, mm-hmm. You know, wise. He used the word wise.
Beyond your years.
Yeah, something like that. He said, I was too young for World War I, and I was too old for World War II. I remember him telling me that one like it was 80 years ago. but I remember him saying that. And I remember the story of Dad. They were plowing the back 40 over there, and for some reason, I want to say up there by Sunny Point someplace, and Grandpa White owned some land there, and Dad was plowing behind a team of mules. He pulled the rings back on the mules, tucked out straps off, threw it on the ground, walked up to Grandpa, and he says, I'd rather be in the South Pacific fighting those beep, 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 beep Japanese. Turned around and walked off. He said Grandpa just stood there and cried.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I remember a story Unc used to tell, too. When he got out, he come home and he was feeling good. He was best shape of his life. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
You want to tell
it? No, you tell it.
And so some of his brothers were at home, and he was going to wrestle them, you know, just challenge them. And so
he'd worked out and going to whoop them.
Yeah, oh yeah, pretty much. And he puts, I don't know who it all it was. I don't remember that part of it. But, I mean, he just puts them down, a couple of them, lickety-split. And he tells Grandpa Jess, he said, you're next, old man. And Grandpa said, well, you just come in and get all you want. And Unc, he rushes in there, and he said, I don't know how he did it, but he hip-checked me. And I went about 6 foot in the air and landed on my back. Knocked the breath out of me. He said, I breathed in 6 times before I ever breathed out. And he said, now, when you can handle the old man, you're ready to face the world.
I've heard that story
many
times.
Yeah, right.
Many
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
Well, what was when I showed you the picture that I'd found of Unc at one of the family gatherings, and he's standing there with his shirt unbuttoned.
Oh, yeah.
What was his signature move for showing the girls how tough he was?
Yeah.
Set his chest hairs on fire.
Yeah. And he always,
if that won't impress you, I don't know what will.
And he always wore some type of gold necklace.
That medallion that had that panda on it. I don't even know what that was.
He found it at Goodwill store.
I think he got that. It looked like one of those coins down at the game room.
Yeah,
you know, the tokens.
Yeah, he was a case. I mean, people who didn't know Dad or Unc, you could show a family picture and they could pick him out. Well, that's got to be him there.
Yeah, if they had heard anything about him, guaranteed.
Yeah, he is.
You was mentioning Papo. I want you to tell these guys, I don't want you to just switch off of the war, but we might bounce back and forth if it's okay.
That's okay. It's fine.
I was telling them that some of the greatest honors we have around Sunfish is we try to recreate pranks. And so Colin has told me a funny story that I've told about when he was young. And so you're second oldest grandchild, is that right? Is Denny the oldest?
Well, no, I'm the third.
Third oldest grandchild.
And don't ever forget who the second one is, because she will have a fit.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay.
Second oldest boy grandchild.
Yes.
Let me say it like that. Yeah. And so, like you and Uncle Roy, who's the youngest boy of your uncles, mm-hmm. not a whole lot of age difference.
7 or 8 years. I grew up with Roy.
So he was more, you know, like a brother to those younger ones. You know how you got a big family spread out? He's more like a brother to them. But my Papa Kurt, he was the third oldest boy. And so I'll let Colin tell this, but when you got locked in the corn crib... And then fast forward a few years when you were going to lock in the crib.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Uncle Kurt, and I loved Uncle Kurt, but you had to be tough to hang out with Uncle Kurt all day long. I don't care how old you were.
Well, he's a, let me describe him just a little bit first.
Okay.
About 6'3", would you guess?
Oh, at least 6'3". What was his nickname?
Biggin.
Biggin.
And this is your papa?
Papa, yeah. My dad's dad.
I thought it was just me that didn't get the tall jeans.
No, I come out of the Ashley.
I've heard all my life about Kurt being able to throw a square bale over a 2-ton truck with them 5 high and never touch a bale.
Yeah, now that was...
he was as strong as an ox.
That was funny to him. So I want you to, of course, you know, we play pranks on each other. They'd be hauling hay in the field, and you'd look back on your side, and you'd missed a bale. And so you'd go back and pick it up, and not hardly like being out of line as Mr. Airborne was, but you'd have to hustle back and pick your side up, and you'd be going along. You'd look back, you'd miss the bell again.
And he was throwing
Kurt
them
was throwing them over the wagon on your side, and that was funny to him.
Absolutely.
Hey, right now, while I'm not picking hay up, I think it's funny.
Well, I mean, it is funny, but to be that strong to do that.
Yeah. And JP was right behind him.
And I've heard Uncle Gene say, like, when they would take seed to Grandpa, Kurt, he would, you know, double up on each shoulder and take the seed out, take the fertilizer out. Of course, they weren't planting with 12 row planters back then. You know, it was probably a 2-row behind a team or whatever, you know, or sowing with your hand. But he's just always been
tall
and big and strong and country strong. When he was raising hogs, I've heard him tell several times, you know, how an old boar will get after you or something like that and just knock him out.
Hey, I've heard he knocked a mule out once.
Just not just take a stick and beat him off, just right in the head, and the old boar just, you know, lay there and flop.
Uncle Kurt used to say, mule killer.
Mule killer, that's right. So that's just kind of a little brief.
You know how much he weighed when he was born?
I don't know.
You don't?
No, I don't know that.
Now, Chloe White, my grandmother, Uncle Kurt's mother, was not a big woman. Now, she wasn't 5'3", but she, you know, she was a average size, probably 5'6", 5'7", woman. Gave birth to 11 children. Lost one.
Just a few days. A
few days after was born, Randall. And then another little girl died when she was about 12 from leukemia. Raised all those kids. Kurt weighed 13 pounds. How much did you weigh when you come out?
I think 8.
Eight, man, you. Anyhow, never mind. We won't go there.
I think Papa was eating gravy when he was born.
Oh, well, this is a true story too.
I've heard. I think I know what you're gonna tell. Yeah. I've heard this.
Grandma couldn't produce any milk for Uncle Kurt.
She had some sort of fever, or sickness, or illness.
Something. You know, she just couldn't because she breastfeed all the kids.
Well, that's all you had.
That's all you had back in those days. But Kurt had to nurse off of a neighbor.
It was Mary Ellen.
Really?
It was Dorothy's mom. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was similar.
Similar to Mamaw done the same.
Mary Ellen Hayes. Yeah. That's when they owned this farm here, this Jess White farm.
And it was Mary Ellen Hayes.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
Well,
that's
so she was related kind of to you?
That's, oh, yeah.
Distantly.
I mean, yeah.
Distantly.
Okay. So you must be related to Uncle Kurt.
Well, that'd be all right.
Well, he's close to that big. He's not hardly that big, but he's close to that big.
Must have been some damn good milk.
Red Top.
It definitely wasn't that pink top, was it?
But the story you want me to tell is, yeah.
So he's a big man to sum all that
up. Oh, yeah, I've seen him do stuff that, you know, Hercules couldn't do. But if you hung around Kurt long enough, all day long, he'd take you over to Walter Miller's place and get you five pieces of candy or, you know, something. You know, he was going to get something. And, you know, when I was a kid, hell, we didn't have nothing. We didn't have no electricity or any of that fancy stuff. And, you know, you sure didn't go up to your grandpa like they do nowadays and say, hey, Grandpa, can I borrow 20? Grandpa never seen 20 except twice.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at it twice, so he must have had four of them. Right. But anyhow, we were just poor people.
But everybody was poor.
Everybody was poor.
You didn't know any different, did you?
No. But I knew if I hung around with Uncle Kurt all day long, I was going to get some candy at the end of the day. So I could take a beating. Anyhow, there at the Cub Creek place, the house is up on the hill, and down at the little, there by Cub Creek, toward the back, was a barn. And that's where Grandpa kept cows and pigs and stuff, and Kurt was always on the farm doing stuff, you know. And Grandma would holler at dinner time. So me and Kurt, we'd come up and walk up the hill, and before you get to the house, about 75 yards or so, there was an old
corn crib,
and it had the chicken feed, hog feed, and all kinds of grains and stuff in there where they kept. And we'd walk by there, and Kurt would say, oh, go in there. Grandma wanted you to go in there and look and see if you could find any eggs. Because that was one of my jobs, was to hunt for all the eggs, because, you know, they were all free-range chickens. They'd allow them to...
They'd hide them.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So big old dummy me, well, little old dummy me, I'd go into this corn crib to look for eggs, and Kurt would lock me in. He'd go up to the house and eat dinner. And, of course, Kurt, you know, it took him sometimes an hour and a half to eat dinner. And I'm out here about 50, 75 yards out in this corn crib just a-screaming my little ass off. Screaming, crying, just, oh, I'm all tore up. And Grandma would say, where's Colin? Oh, he's coming.
He's coming around.
He'll be here in a minute. And I'm just bawling. So he gets done eating, and he comes out. He unlocks and lets me out, and I run up and start, you know, crying to Grandma, and you'll be okay. But he did that all the time.
And it was funny.
It was funny to Kurt. So I come back from Vietnam. It was right before I went to Vietnam, I think. Anyhow, me, Kurt, and Gary are all down at his barn there where Aunt Dorothy lived.
Gary's my dad.
And Aunt Dorothy hollers that dinner's ready. So me and Gary were walking up front of, you know, horsing around. Yeah, Gary was more like a brother to me than he was my cousin. You know, I was always messing with Gary. And we come up to, they had a little chicken coop there. Might have been a little corn crib on the side of it. And I told Gary, hey, Gary, your mom wanted you to go in there and look for some eggs. See if you can find some eggs. Oh, Gary, boy, he hid in there and went in that door, and I closed it and locked it, you know. And I heard, I could have swore, a herd of buffalo coming. And I looked around.
Of course, Dad's screaming, hollering.
Oh, my gosh, he's having a fit. I turn around and look, and you can tell, I can tell, when Uncle Kurt was pissed. And guys, let me tell you, it was just a steam coming from him. And my eyes must have gotten really big. And he grabbed me. And I swear he lifted me up off the ground, but maybe I jumped. I don't know. He scared me to death. Don't you ever take my son and lock him up in a corn crib. And I'm looking at him saying, hey, dummy. Don't you remember it being funny?
Isn't this what we used to do?
Isn't that what we're supposed to... He didn't like it that way. But now, Uncle Kurt's gone. I love him. He was good to me when I was a little kid. He tucked me in when my parents didn't want me. Him and Aunt Dorothy were like, they were saviors to me.
Did you like Mama's cooking?
Oh, my God. There's only two people. I hope both of them are in heaven. I hope I get to heaven. And I hope both of them are cooks. And that's my grandma and Aunt Dorothy. Yes. And Denny loves her biscuits.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell that story, too.
Yeah, go ahead. That's a good one.
But, no, Uncle Kurt, he loved to prank you, but he didn't love getting pranked. He didn't like that part.
Well, you must not have got that from him, Kyle, because Kyle can take it.
Kyle can take it. Yeah, I think Gary could take it.
Yeah, but Kurt, that's where my training come in. Really? If you growed up around Dad, you better be able to take it.
Because he'd dish it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'd go out there and open up that gate. It'd be an electric fence. I'd get out of the truck and go up there, and he would push me with the truck. He'd push me into that electric fence. And me sitting there just shaking, you know, and him sitting in the truck just laughing, thinking that was funny. But if you do that... But anyhow...
You know, I've always heard a lot more stories, though, about Dad pulling things on him than I ever heard about him pulling on Dad.
Well, I think he knowed when it come to your dad. You know, like, there's a hierarchy of pranksters. Yeah. Like, there's people I don't prank.
Yeah.
So he was like, if I get him, I might get back worse and not get my trucks worked on.
Yeah. You may just get shot.
Get paid with interest.
But see, Gabby's a guy that I won't prank.
That's what I'm saying. There's a hierarchy to this. He's still one that I won't.
I love the guy. I've known him all my life. I love the guy.
Well, that's what I say. I've always heard stories about things he's done to Gary, but never any pranks Gary pulled back on him.
No. There's certain people like Sack.
That's all right.
Like
that was my dad's nickname.
Yeah, Sack. Yeah. We talked about the nicknames.
We talked about nicknames.
Yep. Sack, yeah. I can't say his nickname on the air. but I do know that he was about, how tall was you when you stopped nursing?
12.
When your feet hit the ground? When your feet could hit the ground?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
Colin said my mom carried me around till my feet hit, my feet dragged the ground. And I was a mama's boy, but not hardly that bad.
I don't think Gary ever took him fishing in his life. He could have, I don't know.
No, Dad didn't believe in stuff like that.
Yeah.
He took you farming.
Yeah, if it wasn't working.
Yeah, making money.
Oh, yeah, that's foolish.
I took Kyle fishing.
We followed a 535 round baler, I don't know how many rounds, on Honda four-wheelers one summer, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd have loved to fish that day.
But I took Kyle fishing, and, of course, Maxine was nervous as a cat on the roof. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I said, Max, he'll be okay.
He's 14.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just kidding.
He shaved this morning. We went over. Do you know where Brad White lives? You know,
the pond in front of his house.
I took him over there fishing. We were only gone a couple hours. Maxine was standing at the end of the driveway when we left. I looked in a rearview mirror, and there she was. And we went fishing, and we were coming back. And for some reason, I had a camera. But anyhow, I seen an old beer can in the field. And I said, Zach. I said, Kyle, pick that beer can up. Hold it up. And I took a picture of him. Him sitting there opening a beer can. So I take him back up the house. And where do you think Maxine is?
Still on the porch.
Still there in the same spot we left 2 hours prior. Now, Maxine, I hope you don't listen to this, but you know it's the truth.
I'd still like that. I'm not going to deny it.
But, yeah, we had... Now, I've known this guy here ever since...
Since I was born.
Ever since. And I remember my son, he's older than
Kyle.
It's that senior moment. But my son had an Atari, I believe it was. Wasn't it Atari?
A Coleco? Coleco is what it was called.
And he had about 20 games.
It was pre-Nintendo.
But it wasn't an Atari.
It was not an Atari. It was pre-Atari.
Huh.
Google it. It's a thing.
Atari.
Coleco.
Coleco. I think you're right.
It is, yeah. And I remember it. I was tickled to death.
Probably worth thousands.
I wish I still had it.
Yeah.
He had, my son probably had 20, 25 games. Well, he wanted the new game, whatever the new game.
Probably Atari.
Atari. So probably. I got him that. And I thought to myself, I'll take this, and I'll give this to Kyle. Because did you have a game, or you didn't have a game, or you had one of those?
The
white ball going bing.
Yeah, I had a
bing,
game. Bing. Yeah, it was jacks and.
So anyhow,
rocks,
sticks.
I come down here all the time.
Hurdle tractors.
I come over to Gary's place, and I think that's the day some dog bit me. But yeah, anyhow,
Snowball. You remember Snowball?
I remember Snowball.
Snowball bit everybody.
Yeah, you're not.
Snowball didn't like anybody.
Yeah, I hated that dog. So I come in and I told Gary and Maxine, I said, I got something for Kyle. And he opened up, and Kyle, he was, whoa, he was in heaven, man. He just, boy, this is it. Yeah. I probably became his second favorite cousin when I gave him that. I don't know who in the hell the first one would be, but anyhow, it really lit him up.
Yeah.
It was big time. So Maxine comes in there. Kyle's in heaven. And, of course, that's her little baby. And, oh, he's just having the time of his life. And Gary, he don't care. Maxine comes in there and says, now, Gary, you need to pay Colin for that game. Oh, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. Yeah, I didn't want no money. I wouldn't have took any money, but it was just, he'll be all right.
Yeah.
They got a TV. I remember when they got the first TV and they got two channels. Oh, that'd be okay.
That's enough.
That's what everybody had around here.
13.5. That's 13.5. Yeah.
Yeah, two channels.
See, these guys was pouring on me last week about me being tight. Uh-huh. Take up for me here. Was Dad pretty conservative?
Which white was it? Lord have mercy.
Well, I did have someone tell me here a while back. They said, now there's tight, and then there's white tight.
Yeah. And there's enough. Said, now,
I think Uncle Gene might have skipped that.
He skipped it a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. He skipped it. Me, I don't care about money.
Uncle told me he would have been the richest man in Emerson County if he hadn't had to give up half of what he owned 8 times.
He did. No, he's owned a couple nice farms.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said, hey, I would have taken one of those. You know. What we got from Dad was what he had in his pocket.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, I believe it.
How old was he when he passed away?
82.
82.
And I could have won a lot of money if I'd have bet on how long he's going to live. Because people didn't think he'd make 60. Mm-hmm.
Just because the way his
His lifestyle. You do not have enough time. He was...
How many car wrecks do you think he had in his life? I've heard people tell, like older people, say that when Uncle Gene, because he always lived off from here when we were young. He didn't move back here until about, what would you say?
Well,
80?
Yeah. Okay. Brad was about 14 years old.
Okay.
13, 14 years old.
Okay.
And Brad's coming up on...
So about 89 then or something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say around 1990.
89 or 90 or something like that.
He just appeared one day.
I think it was earlier than that.
But when
it may have been.
When he come in and visit when he was young, he always lived mostly up in Indiana. Was it Columbus?
Most of the time.
Bloomington, maybe? Or
he lived in Bloomington, Columbus,
right
mostly.
In there. And they said when Uncle Gene come in, said he was in a 440 Olds. Convertible.
442.
Olds convertible. Said he had usually a different woman.
Right. And he was drunk.
And he was dressed to the nines.
Yeah.
I mean, for the time, whatever was the high max style.
He just never grew out of that.
Yeah.
He stayed in the 70s and 80s.
A lot of polyester in his closet.
Oh, yes, yes.
But they said like it would be... You would be in town and you would talk to people, or you'd be up here at the store and you'd talk to people. Gene White's in town.
Yeah.
Have y'all seen Gene White?
Yeah.
Gene White's in town.
He was big thing.
It was big news that Uncle Gene would come to town because he had a new car, a new wife.
And it was always an Oldsmobile, a Cutlass,
something
a
442. That would run fast, usually a convertible.
Yeah, usually a convertible. He was in Columbus and he's out drinking one night, and the cops got behind him and flipped on the light. Well, he just layered to the floorboard. He just took off. And they're chasing this man in a gold 442 convertible. And every cop in Columbus is chasing him. And he's outrunning every one of them. And he finally goes in an alley somewhere, and he parks there for a minute, and he sees all these cop cars go over, and they're, you know, they can't find him, so they've kind of pulled over to swap notes and, you know, stuff like that. And old dad, he gets in his, puts it in drive, and just drives real slow right between them. They're parked on each side of the road, drives real slow right between them, and stops and says, "Hey, you guys looking for me?" And then took off again.
Kind of a Dukes and Roscoe Picotrain moment there.
And so that's the time they finally caught him, but he totaled that 442.
Yeah.
And they showed the pictures and how he survived that. If he had been sober, he'd have been dead.
Yeah.
But they took him to jail, and he keeps telling them, "I'm having a heart attack. Go ahead, have it. We don't care." You know, he was having a heart attack. You know, but him to live to be 82. Now, I asked Dad when he was, I think he was up here at Sunfish, because after they diagnosed him with cancer and gave him 6 weeks to live or something.
What kind of cancer was it?
What he said or what it is?
Both.
Okay. He had pancreatic cancer. So he calls us up, and he said, we came up. He said, "Boys, I've had the lick." I said, "Really? What is it?" He says, "I got cancer of the pancreas." I said, "The what?"
"The what?"
"The pancreas." I said, "Okay." So I knew what he was talking about. Well, my little brother, him and Dad got together like water and oil. They're just, and 99% of that was my little brother's fault. He just wanted to be a smart ass. And he said, "Pancreas? What's a pancreas? I never heard of a pancreas. What the hell, you don't know what a pancreas is?" He says, "No, I don't know what a pancreas is." They went back about 15 minutes, and Dad getting madder by the minute, you know, and I wanted to look, and there's a reason why I didn't beat the crap out of him all of his life. I'll tell you that later.
No.
But he just kept jacking with Dad, you know. And Keith finally said, "You mean the pancreas. That's what I said. It was terrible. But anyhow, I would, I'd come up there just about every weekend because I knew he was going to die. Now, me and Dad got along good. Now, don't get me wrong. He's dead and gone, and I love him, and everybody's got good memories of him. Everybody. He was not a good father. I mean, everybody in the family knows that. But he was still my dad, and I still loved him, and I still think about him. Obviously, I'm sitting here telling the world about him.
Right.
You know, if I hated the guy, I wouldn't talk about him.
Well, we all sure had a lot of fun with him. Yes.
Well, he could be fun.
Right.
You know, but it's funny how I asked Aunt Dorothy one day, you know, when Gary was alive, Dad thought the world of Gary.
He did.
Thought the world of Gary. And I was talking to Aunt Dorothy one day, and I said, "Dad really loves Gary. I mean, he really thanks the world to him." And Aunt Dorothy says, "Well, I think he loves you more. He loves Gary more than he does you." I said, "Well, you're probably right, Aunt Dorothy." My sweet Aunt Dorothy just stuck a dagger in my heart.
The truth dagger.
Yeah, the truth dagger. But he did think.
But you guys probably were closer the last 20 years of his life the first 20 years of your life.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
He had, when by the time that he had moved up here, he only married one time while he was here.
Donna,
yeah. And then after they got divorced, he was just kind of a bachelor. And he was that old. He mellowed out a whole lot. Now, he was the guy I've described him before. He's the guy that would make you fighting mad today. Like, so I would get so mad that I would cry. He would grab you by the inside of your leg. He would do something that hurt you that he thought was funny. He'd pull the awfulest trick on you that would just embarrass you to death. And you'd say, "I don't like this guy." And tomorrow you was like, "Dad, we gonna go up, you know, we gonna get up today?" He was that guy that you couldn't stay away from then.
Yeah. Couldn't stay mad at.
Couldn't stay mad at. Yeah.
How many pounds of tomatoes do you think he grew down there in that yard.
More than anybody else. That's all that counts.
And first of the year.
First one.
Have yeah. First one of the year. Yeah.
We used to go.
I don't know how many plants he would fit in that.
200-ish.
Garden. Yeah.
I mean,
200 plants.
Everybody knew to come down to get tomatoes from Gene.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a thing.
He had tomatoes for sale on the porch. And
Honor system?
Honor system, yeah. He would have them just in a big box out there. And he had a bucket, a jar, and it had taped on there how much it was. It had a set of scales, measured your own, and had, you know, usually some plastic bags or boxes to take your ones home. And I've heard several people that would ask him, you know, what if somebody steals some of them tomatoes? And he'd say, if they want to go to hell for stealing, I'll provide them all the tomatoes they can pack. My cousins one time played a prank on him, and he would always keep probably maybe 100 pound at a time or 150 pound, you know, just as they were ripening and coming in on the porch.
Plus he'd run up here to the Amish and buy them.
Listen now.
Yeah.
They were homegrown somewhere.
Yeah, well, right.
But they took every tomato he had and left a note in his jar and said, I owe you, and put a infamous person in the community who was notorious for not paying their bills signed his name to it. And I'm telling you what, I'm glad that I got to up before he got to that gentleman.
He was
because
mad.
He was hot.
Oh, my goodness.
He was hot.
I remember that's that funny. One.
Oh, yeah, he was mad.
You know, I'm surprised you don't get volunteer tomato plants down there still to this day.
Yeah,
you probably do.
Yeah.
Because all the old ones just rotted, and, you know.
When offered on that little restaurant there in the store and restaurant there in Wendyville.
Yeah.
Me and Dad, when he lived down there before he got cancer, we'd go up there every morning. Dad didn't drink coffee, but, you know, he'd sit, you know, get there and I'd have a cup of coffee and Dad would have an RC or something. And Dad was notorious for his tomatoes and his dogs. And always had to have the first. And it was June the 31st, and Dad's thinking that it's July, okay? So he walks in, and of course it don't take long when Gene White walks into a room to everybody getting fired up. I guarantee you I'll have the first tomato this month. Alford looked at him, and I think Judy Alford.
That's Dave's wife.
Looked at him and said, you think you'll get the first tomato this month, Gene? Yeah. Of course, they know it's June 31st, and they don't think Dad knows it. Well, I don't think you will. Well, that just, well, I'll put out some money, big boy.
Yeah, don't tell him no.
Yeah, don't say no. Put your money where your mouth is, big boy. Dad reaches in his pocket and lays a $20 bill, lays it on there, says, put it down, big boy. Alford went in his pocket and got 20 out. Said, okay, says, you going to bring that tomato at the end of the day or what? No, I said sometime this month. He said, well, the day's June 31st, Gene. I guess you'll have to bring it in sometime today. Oh, God, Dad, it hit Dad then. Oh, man, I never seen anybody get so upset because he lost $20. He got beat at his own game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he didn't like that at all.
What about his cooking? Y'all got to touch on his cooking.
Well, let me tell you this before you move on, since you're on tomatoes. You know, when you've got that many tomatoes, you've just got an enormous amount of vines. And so at the end of the year,
he had 200 tomato plants on what? A 3/4 acre?
No.
Oh, not even 3/4.
Yeah. No, it was.
Quarter.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, they were just stacked side to side.
Oh, just everywhere.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to go through at the end of the year when you got all the tomatoes picked, which he was so particular about his tomatoes. If you broke a tomato off and the stem was still on there, oh, my gosh, it was, you know, it was the worst thing you ever done because that could puncture a tomato that's in the box. So you know, you make sure you get all those off. But anyway, at the end of the year, you just got an enormous amount of vines, so you pull all the wire baskets out and set them up for the next year, pull all your stakes out, your backer sticks, and set them up for the year. you know, your yards, you've had a few storms, you probably got some limbs down. But anyway, he would have an enormous pile of tomato vines, just dead, dried up tomato vines every year.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Brad, Brad's my cousin, he's Unc's second favorite nephew behind me. Me and Brad and Spanky's out one night, and we think it's going to be hilarious to set his tomato vines on fire.
This.
And I mean, them things will go up like yesterday's newspaper.
Yeah, they'll go.
So it's, I mean, it's not super late, but it's fall of the year. It gets dark a little bit early. It's dark. Uncle Gene, he'd go to bed when it got dark. And so we set this on fire, and I mean, we got a fire. It is rolling. I'm talking, it looks like you've got a bonfire set. And we wait. And we wait. No Unc.
Did you all just light it, or did you put gas?
Well, we had some accelerant.
Okay. I thought accelerant was part of the story.
Yeah, we had some accelerant. and we wait, and we think, well, this ain't going to be funny if Unc don't see it. So we're in, Spanky's got a square body Chevrolet. I don't even remember the year, but early 80s, I would guess, or something like that.
It's an old truck.
It was red. Had a pretty hot motor in it, and I'm telling you what, you could fire that thing up and kick the key off and back on, and it sounded like a cannon backfired. So we're out there in the field. This is before I had any cows up here, just had that electric wire that Ricky Wayne started with. And he fires that truck up, and kaboom, kaboom, about three times we see that kitchen light on. So we think, uh-oh, we better get out of here. So we come out the field.
And y'all are in the yard still.
We're in the yard still.
Okay.
Yeah, we drive out the field. So this field corner is in the intersection of a road. It corners Highway 187 and 238. And we come out on 238. I let the electric fence down. We come out on 238, just hop the ditch. And we pull down to where the store is here at the intersection. And we make a left, and we see the porch light on. You got this big blaze behind the house. And we're looking at the blaze, and we don't really see nothing. And Brad's like, crap, there he is. And Unc is out in the driveway in his pajamas with a double-barrel shotgun, broke over, trying to get it loaded. And you'd think his shells was big as Coke cans because he is wound up, you know. It's dark out there. Well, he finally gets them shucked in there, and we're down by the house. We're 100 yards. Boom, boom, he fires at us.
Shoots
at us. We're that far, so nothing hits or anything like that. We think it's hilarious. Next morning, I'm at the station working. We're working it over at the service station.
Does he have any idea who it was?
He thinks it's us.
Well,
I mean, if anything happens to Unc, we were the automatic guilty party. Yeah. But I had an old, you remember the old gray BJ truck? It was an 87 Ford. Yeah. Had a 302 Flowmasters. It was loud. In his mind, he thinks we're in that. Because it's dark and he don't get a good look at the truck. So Unc comes up, you know, we tell each other, Spanky's working over there at the time, Unc's here. Play it cool. He comes up there, hey, you boys come out here for just a minute. What is it? Well, I got something I want to talk to you about. So he's laid up on Spanky's truck, got his arm just like that.
The truck y'all were driving.
The truck that we were driving, and he's dishing it out. He said, there's somebody up there at the house last night set a bum off in one of the mater plants. Of course, he thought that's what started the fire. He said, set a bum off in one of the mater plants. And he said, I know who they are, too. He said, I done been over at the sheriff's office. And he said, I've described the truck to him. He said, and if I ever see that truck again, I'll know it. And he's leaned up against the truck that we were in. You know, he just got it in his mind. We was in our old truck. And we're like, really? You know the truck? If I ever see that truck, I'll pinpoint it. And so, anyway, he didn't go see the sheriff. Yeah, he was just trying to make us confess.
Yeah. Deep down, he thought it was funny after he figured it out.
Yeah, which we never would confess.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. So did you ever tell him?
Oh, yeah. Years later, I would tell him things that I'd done to him. But you'd have to buy a little time. You know? You didn't want to just do it right off the bat.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I do that to I did that to Winston, and I tell Jill stuff now that, you know, stuff that we pulled back years ago. I tell her, you know, what happened similar to you all slipping in over there that night, you and Josh, and in the middle of the night on me and Jared whipping on us, scaring us to death. I tell her that stuff. She's like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't know that stuff was going on back then. Well, what about the Gene and the, somebody told me he threw car tires in the fireplace in the house.
Yes.
One time.
One. He just did one.
Okay.
That's all. You don't put a...
It wasn't tires. It was a tire.
It was a tire. And
this was an open fireplace.
Yeah, just a regular open fireplace.
The way I heard him describe it, a house with hardwood floors, I think.
Well, it might have had hardwood floors. All I know is it got real warm in that house.
Now, is that the house that caught on fire?
Well, I don't think so, but that's another story.
Would you want to tell that one? No,
that's fine.
I don't think that was too off the cuff.
We were living up around the Shepherdsville area. And had an old farmhouse back set off the road, you know, no neighbor within a mile, volunteer fire department, and had an upstairs, and me and my kid brother, we slept upstairs. And I don't know what time it was. I know we had been asleep and we were sound asleep. And all of a sudden I heard, turned out to be Dad, run up those stairs a hollering, "Boys, boys, wake up, wake up." He went over there. I remember him shaking us because we're in a deep sleep.
You're right.
He says, "Wake up, boys, wake up. The house is on fire. The house is on fire." And that kind of startles you, you know. "Oh, shit, the house is on fire. Get dressed. Let's go." And I look down there by the staircase, and the flames are coming up the staircase, and I'm thinking to myself, "Get dressed. How about let's get out of here?" And Dad has already went out the window on top of the roof of the house. Me and my kid brother, we run out there. Now, we're standing there, and there's snow on the ground. It's about 30 degrees, and we're in our underwear.
Did you put those shoes on, though, that you had?
Oh, he had bought us a pair of boots that I don't know who would wear, but...
Well, you all did.
Well, we wore them to school, but see, I had a pair of tennis shoes at the school. And I'd get, after I got off school bus, I'd take those old clodhopper boots off and put my tennis shoes on. They're the ugliest boots in the world. And, let's leave those boots
there. The house is on fire. He said he just set the boots back.
Just set the boots back. I don't want the boots. So we come out the window.
Say what you can. I want to set the boots back.
Yeah. Yeah, get what you can. Get what? We ain't got time to get nothing.
You got flames coming up the stairs.
We
right?
got up coming up the stairs, and you got to go past the stairs to get to the window. Now, as my grandfather always say, I was very intelligent.
Yes, handsome.
And handsome. Mm-hmm. So I knew if I waited too much longer, that fire coming up that staircase may block my way.
Right.
So I wanted to make sure I got through there. Now, the guy running behind me, I didn't worry about too much. But anyhow...
Now, you helped Keith out the window.
Did I help him out?
Yeah, I think, didn't you?
No, the window was right there. Nobody helped me. So I jumped out on the roof, and Dad went ahead and jumped on the ground. Keith gets out on the roof, and about that time, the flames are coming out of the window. And that's how close it was. So he didn't have to ask me twice. So boom, I jump. Well, Keith's standing on the roof. He won't jump. "I'm scared. Dad said, "Come on, jump." And the flames are coming out.
Yeah.
So Dad finally says, "Hey, I'll catch you." And I'm thinking, he's 14 years old. He weighs 110 pounds. You're going to catch him? I want to step back and watch this. Too bad we didn't have videos back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
So he jumps out the window and lands on top of Dad. One of Keith's tooth went into Dad's head, so I got two injured people down there. Anyhow, he says, "You boys go get in the truck. Go get in the truck. Because it's cold outside." So we start running toward the pickup truck, and that truck is loaded. It's got a refrigerator. It's got couches. It's got furniture. It is loaded to the gills. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't tell you what I was thinking, but I was thinking to myself, he's got to be the strongest and the fastest man alive. That house was burning for 30 minutes before he just, "Oh, that's right, there's two boys upstairs. I better go get them." And of course, it was just a volunteer fire department. The house had burned by the time the fire department got there.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Oh. I know, I could just see him talking to the insurance guy. It was terrible. I just barely got my boys out. Just
barely
in time.
Got the boys in the washer and dryer out.
In the refrigerator.
And they're looking at that pickup truck with all that stuff loaded and flames going behind him thinking, what did I forget? All them two boys.
Yeah.
Dad gone.
Yeah, it was. It was tough. So like I said, you know, Dad was a lot of fun, but we never had to worry about taking the Father of the Year award off the wall.
Well, he sure was a joy to have in Sunfish with us growing up.
Yeah, well.
I mean, just at different times.
I wish you'd have been up in the stairs.
Well, you know, we were talking the last time we did this. You know, we didn't appreciate what we had growing up around here.
No.
We did not realize who we grew up with. And, you know, we were talking about some of the guys who we thought were old, weren't that old at the time. And he was a joy to have around.
Bub mentioned his cooking.
I know
you really had some.
Well, now
gourmet
Dad would,
meals up there,
fine,
like I
fine
did.
Cuisine.
Yeah.
Fine
cuisine. Hey, Dad was a good cook.
And then
he got slacked off a little bit with his health and everything, and he didn't really care as much. But one thing that Dad did is he went up here to this. Was it IGA?
It was CB.
CB's, and he had some 2-inch thick T-bones.
Special cut.
And I love it, which reminds me, somebody owes me 2 pieces of...
Got them right here in the freezer.
Okay, buddy. Just want a reminder.
Hayes Farm Fred Beef for all your hamburger steak needs.
Anyhow.
Oh, sorry for the plug.
Dad would take these, which, you know, you take a good steak and put it out on the grill. You either marinate it all night or rub it down with some good seasoning and stuff and put it on the grill and that marbling.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, you know, you can't get too much better than that. Well, Dad would take this expensive, I guess, T-bone steak, and he'd put it in a pan of water. And he'd take that pan and he'd put it in the oven and he'd boil it. And he would take that steak out, and of course, all the stuff...
frothed up.
You know, would come up to the top. And Dad'd say, you ain't going to eat that junk. See, we just scum that off. He says, you won't have to eat all that stuff. He said, he called it something. And I said, well, some people call it flavor. I don't know. I just saying. And he'd take that steak and he'd throw it on a skillet and then throw it on your plate. Now, let me ask you all here and be honest with me. Have you ever eaten a leather boot?
Oh, I have.
Yeah, you have over there.
Over there,
leather boot. It was the toughest. And he's sitting there sawing it with his knife. And he, you won't get one of these in a restaurant. And I looked at him and I said, better not. He took an absolute perfect cut of meat and completely destroyed it.
Okay, false teeth. And he would chew on a bite. And then teeth
minutes.
Would be clicking.
20 minutes, you know. But you didn't know what he might have spaghetti, meatloaf.
And brown beans.
Brown beans, cornbread. You didn't know what he was going to have.
All sorts of mixtures.
And he had a real bad habit about 2 o'clock in the morning. He'd wake up and he'd go in the kitchen. Everything. He'd get the meat out. He'd get the spaghetti out, the brown beans out, the cornbread out. And he was cooking again.
Whole nother meal.
And he'd be sitting down there. Eating up a storm, I'd wake up, I'd go, what are you doing? He had a plate full of food. He said, I got hungry in the middle of the night. And I said, hell, I guess you did. Look at that. I was down there, he was sick. And I come up here. In fact, I was living in Panama City. I was working in Dothan, Alabama. Had an office there. So every Friday after work, I would take off from Dothan, Alabama, and I would drive to Sunfish, Kentucky, and spend the weekend with my dad. 34 straight weekends, because he only had 6 weeks to live. He lived 20 years.
Yeah.
I gotta kill that doctor.
Up could too. He yeah. said, I sold everything I owned.
Yeah, we had a big auction and everything. But he had a colonoscopy. So he had to sit there and drink that stuff, and he was sitting out there, and he'd wear maybe striped shorts and a polka dot shirt. I mean, he didn't care. I mean, he had old shorts on, and he was sitting out there in front of the porch, and he was drinking that stuff every hour, 8 ounces of that stuff, and every now and then gas would build up, and he'd let it out, you know. I said, Dad, you better be careful. I'll be okay. I'll be okay. He sat there, and gas come out, and I said, I got to run up here and see somebody. I'll be right back, because I got to take him the next morning to get a colonoscopy. So I'm going about an hour, and I come back. He doesn't have the striped shirts and polka dot shirts on anymore. He's got green shorts and a blue T-shirt. Middle of the day. You know, I know he doesn't change clothes in the middle of the day.
Or week.
So I pull in the driveway, and I said, you got a new outfit on. I guess he was a mess. I said, well, that's the reason that you're drinking that stuff, Dad, to clean you out so that we can get the colonoscopy tomorrow. Okay. So we go in that night, and of course we go to bed. I'm sound asleep, and I hear this awful noise. What in the world is that? So I wake up, walk through his bedroom, and walk into the living room, and look toward the kitchen, and there he is, eating. He is just cramming it down, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. We got to be there at 6. And for a colonoscopy. And he's sitting there eating those brown beans and cornbread and fried potatoes and a spaghetti or whatever else he's got. He's just a shoveling it down. I said, what are you doing? What the hell does it look like I'm doing? I'm eating. I said, I can see you're eating. I said, we got to go in a couple hours for a colonoscopy.
He's going to make him earn it.
He said, I forgot all about that. I said, Lord have I'm going back to bed. You know, it's like Laurel and Hardy or Two Stooges or something.
One of my favorite memories of Unc and the food. So his least favorite food, do you remember this? Pizza.
Oh.
He called it pizza.
Yeah.
And the reason he didn't like pizza, he said it looked like it had already been eaten once. So I don't know if he didn't like it because he just never did taste it.
Well, that was a white thing.
Yeah. But one of his favorite foods was, you remember when he fixed that vegetable soup?
Mm-hmm.
How big was that kettle he had? Would you think it was?
Well,
in my young memory, it seems to me like 5 gallons, but it was probably more about like a 3 gallon.
No, I don't know. It might have been a 5 gallon.
It was huge.
It was big.
It was huge. And his famous saying was, I put everything in it in the kitchen except a dish rag, and I drug it through it a couple of times. So I had eaten his vegetable soup for years. I mean, it had macaroni and peas and green beans and corn and hamburger meat. And
it's kind of like a burger.
Oh, just everything you could think of. And so I roll in up there one day during the summer. It's hot summertime, which Unc, he never run the air much. He just opened the windows up, the door, yeah. Front door. And I park right there. You park right there in the door that you come into the kitchen. And I walked up on the steps. And he's got that kettle on the stove boiling that soup. And of course, it's hot in that kitchen anyway with that stove on. I bet it's 110 degrees in that kitchen. And he's got a wooden spoon. It looks like it's 3 foot long. No shirt on, up over that thing. I mean, just stirring the fire out of it. Sweat and cigarette ash going everywhere. I said, Unc, what are you doing? He said, I'm making this soup. And I said, yeah, but you're smoking. He said, yeah. I was like, but I continued to eat it, so it never hurt me, I don't reckon.
I don't think
so. But it was the funniest sight you ever seen to see. It's like a witch in a big witch's
room.
Yeah, and that sweat just falling everywhere, that cigarette ash every time you come around.
We had everybody there one night, except for Karen, the youngest daughter. She never was around Dad very much. But me, Sharon, and Keith was there, and probably Keith's wife. And we all decided we're going to go up to Wendyville and get us something to eat. You know, they always had pretty decent food. So I asked Dad, and I think Keith asked Dad too. I said, Dad, you want us to pick you up anything? No, I don't want nothing. Okay. Dad said no. Keith, Dad, you sure you don't want anything? I can get you some shrimp or, you know, catfish. I don't want anything. Okay. So we drive up there to Windyville. We get something to eat, and Keith's sitting there. And Keith's always got to be a... Anyhow. Keith says, I think I'll go ahead and get Dad some shrimp. I said, Keith, Dad doesn't want anything. Yeah, I know, but I'll get him some shrimp anyhow. Water and oil.
Right.
So we come back, and I remember us walking in, Dad making a comment about, do you guys have, you know, good time? Do you, good food? Yeah, yeah, everything was good. Keith handed this to-go box and says, here, I got you some shrimp. Dad grabbed that box, and I told you I didn't want nothing to eat. He walked out on that back porch, and he threw that shrimp all over, threw it right out the back door, just boom. I looked at Keith, and I says,
I told you.
Told you.
We're going to wind this one up, boys. Okay. We went way long, and you've got a ball game you want to watch. I know.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, the ball game started. I recorded one. I didn't record the second one because I heard it only goes an hour. But that's okay.
That's all right. I will have you back. I mean,
this has been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun. Yeah,
it's been real fun. I'm sure you've heard this, but we appreciate your service. You know, we tell people that.
You're the first ones ever told me that.
I don't think so. But we have veterans in our family, all of us do. We try to thank them, and we try to thank people we see them out, but we do appreciate it. I want to make a shout out
to all the veterans. People like your grandfather, like your grandpa, my dad, my uncles, and to all the Vietnam veterans out there. You buku dinky dao. The Vietnam veterans will know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And welcome home. I get thanked all the time, and I really do appreciate it. I really do.
I've heard that term before, and I don't know what it means.
I ain't going
to
tell you.
Well, I'm not asking you to, but okay. I worked with a guy, he was a Jaggers, that used to holler that.
Yeah, buku dinky dao?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I can see he probably hollered it at you.
No.
You sure?
No.
Are you sure he wouldn't?
No.
I'm pretty sure he was.
Maybe, I don't know. But he would holler that at people, and they would holler it back, and I thought it was just some kind of across no land dam.
You think I should tell you what it means?
I don't know. Is it like a secretive thing?
Will Heather be okay with it? Or is it secretive?
I think everybody would be okay with it. Now, like I said, the Vietnam veterans know exactly what I'm saying. But buku dinky dao means you... Buku is French. The French occupied Vietnam for a long time. Buku means big. Dinky dao means crazy. So you buku dinky dao is you buku crazy. You're big crazy.
Big crazy.
Yeah, you'd be messing with somebody in Vietnam and one of the Vietnamese say, buku dinky dao, buku dinky dao. So I got your buku dinky dao right here. Get back in over there in line before I shoot you.
So if you want that on a shirt, we happen to know somebody. Make a shirt with that.
Hayes Farmhouse Designs on Facebook and on Etsy. She does all of our design work. We've taken over her she shed here.
We're in the she shed studio once again.
She made the banner behind y'all. She made the t-shirt that I gave you when you came in.
Where's my t-shirt?
I'll give it to you later.
Okay.
Kyle Lance stole it. So you can have it.
So, folks, we're going to wrap this one up. Thank y'all for listening. We're definitely probably going to have Colin back. Kyle's going to be back hopefully next episode for sure. So, y'all have a good one.